You are listening to Charlotte Real Estate Talk with Pridemore Properties.
Hello, Scott Pridemore here with Mike Hagee for another episode of Charlotte Real Estate Talk. Today, we are very thankful to have Dr. Kevin Mara join us on the podcast. Welcome, doctor.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
Yeah, totally our pleasure. And with Hopeway, you're a director of medical services.
Yes, sir.
Fantastic. Well, mental health is getting a lot of attention lately. Suicides, just mental health issues with regard to child abuse, and the list goes on and on, malnutrition, homelessness. Let's get right into maybe what you work with and what you see day to day. Tell us a little bit about what Hopeway means to you and how you connected with Hopeway.
Yeah, well, you know, first of all, Hopeway is an adult residential mental health center, and we have a continuum of services. We have then the residential portion, you know, clients can come in and stay for, you know, 30, 60, 90 days, get 24/7 nursing care, and during the day get therapy, medication management, and really, you know, sort of help them transform their lives. You know, we have step downs to partial levels of care where people go home in the evenings and weekends, but still get, you know, a good solid 6 to 8 hours of treatment per day. And the whole goal is to actually bridge hospital to home. You know, there are people who are at home and actually have mental health challenges and are able to see their psychiatrist once a month and their therapist once a week and get away with that. But there are people who have more severe illness or episodes that actually require, you know, more intensive care. Sometimes those people can't get that, and then they get so severe that they have to go to the hospital. So we see people who are trying to avoid hospitalizations by coming into our programs, and we see people coming out of the hospital that are trying to transition back home. So we're kind of fill that gap.
Wow.
That's pretty cool. And Hopeway is in a great location. It's a 12-acre campus right on Sharon Road West, right?
Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah. You know, we have walking trails. We have a greenhouse, a beautiful gardens area. It looks like a spa or a resort. It was purposeful as well. You know, we really tried to make it not look like a hospital or a treatment center. You know, it really is. It looks like an upscale spa hotel. We do really good work there as well. So it's a beautiful place to be and to work.
Where do most of the patients, are they referred in, generally speaking, or except the walk-ins?
Yeah. So we have a pretty robust admissions process. People can actually, they come to us from all places, from their physicians, from their therapist, from the hospital, and just internet searches. Word of mouth is something that we see a lot of, and you know, we have admission specialists that are available to speak to people about our programs, make sure that they're checking insurance, and you know, making sure that it's a good fit. And you know, we're just happy to be able to serve the Charlotte community. We also see people from multiple states, and we've had people from Canada, the Philippines, and so we want to be a premier nationally known program as well.
That's fantastic. Wow. So I came to know of learn of Hopeway, that is, through an evening with Dan Harris a few months back at the Museum of the New South that you all put on as the host.
Yeah, it was a great show.
That I don't know how many of those that you guys have done in the past, but for me, it was just really eye-opening to learn more about Hopeway there at the reception. Mm-hmm. Had an opportunity to talk about or learn more about Hopeway from some of your colleagues. Mm-hmm. And I was so impressed. Mike and I wanted to have you guys on today, and you're doing a lot of great work in the community. And that's really why we wanted to have you on, because, you know, a lot of people might say, well, what does that have to do with real estate? Well, in Mike and my opinion, it has a hell of a lot to do with real estate, because what we do is all about people. And mental illness is an issue, and it runs all ends of the spectrum with respect to socioeconomic, people and where they are in society at all levels. Everybody deals with this issue.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I've worked in many settings. I've worked in state hospitals. I've worked in emergency rooms. I've worked in community health clinics. Before I came to Hopeway, I was working for HR and behavioral health in an inpatient unit. And I've treated people that were homeless coming off the street. I've treated people who were lower, middle, upper middle class. I've treated executives and professionals. And we always say in our field, mental illness does not discriminate. And, you know, sometimes there's a false assumption that because someone's successful or they have the support systems there, that they're kind of invincible and, you know, they're not susceptible to mental illness. And those people actually they have the most difficulty seeking help because people look to them as sources of power and strength. And it's really difficult for them to kind of, acknowledge and accept that they need help as well. So we actually see a lot of, I've seen over my career, a lot of people like that.
Definitely. And how did your journey to be a pivotal member there with Hopeway, tell us a little bit more about your story. Yeah. Where are you from and how'd you make your way to Charlotte? And then how'd you find your way into Hopeway?
Yeah, well, I'm from West Virginia. I'm a Mountaineer and I was born and raised there. I attended West Virginia University, studied biology as an undergrad. Knew I wanted to go into medicine and got into medical school there and thought I wanted to be a pediatrician until I rotated through there and realized that one patient brought three with the two parents in the room and decided that wasn't as interesting to me as psychiatry was. You know, when I walked in my psychiatry rotation in medical school, it was fascinating to me, the mind and behavior and what drives that. So, I decided to do that, but I wanted to, like many West Virginians, kind of step out of the state to kind of explore what else was around there and decided to come to UNC Chapel Hill to do my general psychiatry training. There I met Dr. Allison Kurowski-Mazey, who is actually our CEO at Hopeway. She is a psychiatrist. She was the director of a forensic psychiatry fellowship program that they had at UNC Chapel Hill, dealing with the interface between psychiatry and the law, that could include evaluations for the courts, treating inmates and prisoners, on the civil side, working with one's capacity to make their own decisions, to execute a will, anything like that. So I met Dr. Kurowski-Mazey there. She was my training director, and my first job coming out of fellowship was with Atrium, as I mentioned. My first boss was Dr. Tom Gettleman, a psychologist who is now our chief clinical officer at Hopeway. So it's kind of a small world, and it's just been a great journey, and it's allowed me to grow professionally, and really the continuity that we see at Hopeway, where I'm seeing people over the course of months rather than days or weeks, has been really, really rewarding.
That is so fantastic. Yeah. Really, to have true impact and to serve people in need, you need to have that continuity.
Absolutely. People have asked me what the favorite part of my day is, and it's actually having a discharge visit with someone because I get to see sort of the final product. It's bittersweet. It's bittersweet for them. We both develop attachments to each other, and but it's always kind of a proud moment when they leave and they're doing well.
And it's not just, and I know you know this, but just in case our listeners, just to conceptualize this, the impact that you make with people that are admitted that you help and you serve, it's the ripple effect of all of their family members, their children, their parents. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really incredible if you think about it.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's so many levels beyond just who you sit with face to face for helping people through a situation of mental illness.
Yeah, I'll give you an example. So when I treat parents who have to take time away from their family and their children especially, and they ask me, well, how should I tell my child where I am, what I'm doing? I'm embarrassed about that. Or, you know, I always say to them, depending on the child age, you have kind of a different explanation. But ultimately, when they hit that teenage and young adult years, they can actually reflect back on that time when you stood up and said, I need to get myself help. And that's actually showing them sort of a modeling for them what they should do if they ever come upon a time like that. We often see the product of the opposite of that, where people grow up in families that are not really emotionally savvy, that it's not rewarded to kind of talk about your feelings, just pick yourself up by your bootstraps and keep moving. And when they become young adults and face a stressful world and have a depressive episode or something like that, it seems so foreign to them. They don't know what to do.
Right.
And so that's just an example of how treating an adult, you know, can have a significant impact on their kids. When you look at young kids and maternal depression, I mean, there's a lot of literature that would suggest that there's poor bonding and just poor outcomes in the children of a mother who's not fully engaged and struggling with pretty significant depression.
Absolutely. And obviously, when you think about how someone's situation in life and they're in survival mode, is it the chicken or the egg? You know, I mean, you know, if someone's in survival mode and all they're trying to do is just to figure out how to provide for their family, that could seems like that kind of stress can add, you know, many layers to the issue of mental illness lead in from that survival mode. Can you talk to us a little bit about the people you serve that are disadvantaged or maybe economically they don't have the resources that some others might?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a big problem. And I think that's one of the reasons that Hopeway was actually placed in Charlotte. They did a feasibility study before they opened, or before they built it here in Charlotte, and realized that this particular community was underserved. Directly in comparison with the Triangle area, there was a considerable gap in the percentage of people who needed a psychiatrist and actually had one. Charlotte, I don't have the numbers here in front of me, was probably in the upper 30s or low 40s, whereas you know, the Triangle area was in the 90s.
Wow.
So you can imagine what that would be like and how much outrage there would be if that was primary care or pediatricians or something like that.
Sure.
When we think about, or when I think about someone's mental health problems, I think of it from a biological standpoint. These illnesses are hereditary. There are medical illnesses that kind of interplay with one's mental health. There's a psychological aspect, of course, you know, how one thinks about themselves, their resilience and coping and all that. And then there's a huge social component, financial stress, relationship stress, loss. So folks with a disadvantaged background certainly have a lot of things working against them.
Absolutely. And I'd like to touch on something that you and Mike have in common, and that's exercise.
Yeah.
And how that plays into mental illness. So why not? You guys are CrossFit partners,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Mike lifts a lot more weight than I do. You know, exercise is definitely something that's really, really helpful for mental health. I was actually talking with you guys before we got on the air here about I got into running just because I needed a break. I had some young kids in the house. I needed to listen to my music and throw some earbuds in and go for a run. And I really found that helpful in decompressing some of the stress that I had. And exercise for me personally, and I'm sure Mike can say the same, is a way to kind of maintain my mental health.
Definitely.
We at Hopeway, we have a recreational therapist and we have a group dedicated to exercise and moving. And, you know, we also have two registered dietitians that run food and nutrition groups, talking about the interplay with what you eat and your mental health and exercise. And it's a huge, huge, element. What Mike and I do in CrossFit is not only helpful to our mental health from just endorphins and kind of taking care of your body, but it's a social experience. You know, see the same guys at the gym every day, you joke around with them.
Yep.
You know, it's especially for busy people, you're kind of combining two things in one.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And Mike, I've been fortunate or not so fortunate to attend a few CrossFit classes.
Oh, yeah.
With Mike.
I've roped you along. Yeah. Every time there's a huge running component, and that's your total strength.
I'm okay.
Scott,
the running. I get piece. Exercise, but CrossFit is just a little different for me. I do enjoy it. I'm kidding around, but
I know it.
But I certainly feel it the next day whenever I go on a CrossFit excursion with Mike, and I tend to do. Yeah. So I'm with you on the exercise. You know, running, cycling, and yoga are kind of my things. And to Mike's point, I've been lucky. The few CrossFit visits that I've attended with Mike has had a heavy running, so I got off fairly easy.
Yeah.
But the lifting piece is not something that I do on a regular basis, so that's when I feel it.
Yeah, well, if you look at the research, I mean, the cardiovascular benefits, you know, and doing cardio work on the benefits on the mind is really where it's at. And yoga is really interesting as well because, you know, mindfulness, meditation, those types of things, some of those principles of yoga actually play into brain health as well. There's actually some pretty cool science that shows that meditation and positive thinking and that type of thing can actually cause some structural changes in the brain. So it's pretty interesting stuff.
We're with you. Yeah, and Mike and I have had conversations. I mean, Mike's a very positive person, and I feel like I am too, and that's probably one of the components of strong tenets of our business partnership is that we think, you know, like in respects such as positive thinking and exercise. So with respect to what you guys are doing, how do you get the word out? I mean, obviously the Dan Harris event that I attended, what else do you guys have coming up on the slate? How else can we maybe help to get the word out and push people to learn more about Hopeway?
Yeah, well, first of all, you know, doing something like this is really helpful just to kind of first just, you know, Hopeway aside, just to open up the conversation about mental health and then just kind of let people know what we're doing. We have an educational event every year, the Covington event that hosted Dan Harris, and we're planning the next one for next year. You know, we have outreach specialists that are talking to community providers, to talking to therapists and psychiatrists and saying, you know, hey, if you have someone who's really struggling, who needs kind of a higher level of care, you know, give us a look. You know, I give talks to churches, I give talks to schools, and so we do as providers and with our outreach specialists kind of get out and get the word out. You can check us out on our website, it's www.hopewayfoundation.org. Definitely a lot of information there, and anybody from our admissions office would be happy to talk with you with any questions. And you know, as we do see people even outside of the Charlotte area, and we see quite a few, sometimes people locally who don't personally have a need but have a family member, you know, have contacted us and said, hey, I've got a son or a daughter or a brother or sister that lives in Pennsylvania, and they're struggling to find resources, and we've had them come down and get treatment with us. We have you know, I think we have a fantastic team of individuals from various backgrounds that can kind of meet individual needs of the clients we treat.
Fantastic.
That's
go ahead,
awesome.
Mike.
No, that's great. There's so many people, as we talked about. I think I learned a few things today about how many people, just how common it is and how it impacts every member of society. So I think you guys do phenomenal work, and you know, we're really excited to have you on the podcast today. I think it's important for people out there, you know, if you're struggling or you need some help, there's no shame in reaching out to a professional and asking for help. What are those early indications? Is that the shame and guilt that tend to prevent people from speaking out and saying, you know, I'm in control, I'm supposed to be the one in control, but yet I'm having these, whatever they are, you know, and I need some extra care. Where does that conversation generally start for people that actually cause them to reach out?
Yeah, you know, a lot of times for men, and we're men here talking, it's the wives or the spouses that are actually saying, you know, I've noticed something's going on. It's time for you to kind of step up and get some help. And you know, it's even harder, I think, for men to acknowledge they need help than women, just based on the way that society views us and the way we were raised and that type of thing. Shame and guilt certainly gets in the way. Unfortunately, as we talked about earlier, access gets in the way. I've treated so many people who recognized they needed help and became very frustrated with calling a psychiatrist and saying, oh yeah, we can see you, but we have an 8-week wait list. Yeah. A therapist, and then finding out they're not in network with your insurance. And so it's really difficult and discouraging to someone who's already struggling to try to pick up the phone and get help and not be able to have it there. You know, one of the things that we do in our admissions office is if we're not a good fit for whatever reason, then we are a resource for you to be able to find the right fit for you. And so we do a lot of placement outside of Hopeway if that's the case. You know, early indicators that someone's struggling, a lot of times it's isolation. A lot of times it's kind of lack of enjoyment. A word we use is anhedonia, meaning kind of not deriving enjoyment of the things that you normally would. So you'll see people start to kind of fall off their activities. If it's a buddy we're going to the gym with, you'll start to see them not coming or not engaging in social events that we might be planning. Changes in eating and sleeping habits are a big one. So things that we all experience, but to an extent to where it starts to really impact your daily life is really when we start to get involved.
Yeah, that's, and you mentioned hospital to home.
Yeah.
I think that's a great bridge, you know, because that's the goal. The goal is not to get forever. It's for right now, and hopefully there's a discharge. You mentioned that was one of the most pleasures you have at the end of the day, because you know they've successfully hit their, you know, a successful outcome. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious about the continuum of care after when they go home. Mm-hmm. Does Hopeway have any of those follow-up mechanisms in place, or is it, you know, if they need help, they can come back, certainly?
That's absolutely. So we've had people do well, and then for whatever reason, 6, 8, 10 months down the road, something happens in their life, and or they haven't continued to kind of do the things that's necessary to maintain their health, come back and kind of get a refresher. And oftentimes that's a even more rewarding experience, just because they, they're building on the progress that they had already made. Absolutely, continuum of care after Hopeway is very important. So a lot of times people don't have providers in the community. Sometimes we see people when we're the first people to treat them. We have aftercare specialists that actually work with every client that comes in the door. Before they're even close to discharge, they're meeting with this person, they're talking with the treatment team and figuring out what is this person going to need when they leave Hopeway that's going to allow them to be successful. We have a network of providers in the community that we work with and we refer to and refer to us. And we have connections all over the country through some of our outreach specialists, for the folks that are not from Charlotte. So it's an absolute necessity that someone has, the right providers and the type of providers that they need when they leave. And so everybody, gets an aftercare plan with appointments and, things that they need.
Yeah. Wow. It just sounds, what you guys are doing is just so comprehensive. And really, you try to make it easy for people that need help.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Where it can be confusing and daunting if Hopeway didn't exist.
Yeah.
To your point, you know,
I can give you
getting on a wait list, and then people might say, you know what, forget it. I'll just deal with it, you know, or I'll just move on. This will pass, and it may not pass.
Yeah. One of our referral sources is our educational consultants, which I was really unfamiliar with until I started working at Hopeway. And I think their genesis was to kind of help a student in high school, usually, that has maybe some behavioral health needs or some learning disability and needs kind of a navigator of sorts to help them get into college and make sure that in college they have resources to help them and people understand their needs and they can facilitate testing and things like that to kind of identify their weaknesses. They've gravitated, because there's a need, to just helping people with mental health problems navigate the mental health system. Mm. They're paid to help people find treatment, which is, I mean, they do great work, but in my mind, these people are getting paid to help people navigate this really confusing system. Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunate. Again, not diminishing their role, they do fantastic work, and in a lot of cases they're needed. But if the system was a little bit more robust and comprehensive and easy to navigate, then there wouldn't be a need.
Wow. So, quick question before we wrap: for folks that have really just been, you know, maybe been introduced to Hopeway and the great work that you do, that want to get involved and help, is volunteering? Are there opportunities for folks to volunteer at Hopeway?
Yeah, we do have a volunteer group. And so that's something that if you went to our website, there could be a link there that you can kind of check out. It's at times a little, difficult, just protecting patient confidentiality and that type of thing.
Understood.
For the volunteer work. But we do have a strong group of volunteers. Just getting the word out there is helpful for us as well. Mm-hmm. I continue to try and tell everybody what we're doing, and it's new. I mean, we've only been open for over 2 years now, and I think we didn't touch on this yet, but the a comparable program to Hopeway really doesn't exist in this area. You have to go to Atlanta at the Skyland Trail, which has been incredibly helpful to us and kind of helping us kind of build a program modeled after them. They've been doing it for 30 years. But I used to tell people before Hopeway was here, when I was working in Davidson, I would send people to the airport to go to Florida for comparable treatment. And it's so it's pretty unique program that, you know, it's the only program like it around here.
And you're, and how is Hopeway funded?
It's nonprofit. So there's incredibly incredibly supportive community members here in Charlotte that helped us get off the ground and continually help us. You know, we do take insurance, and we're on in network with several insurance companies, and we do have the ability to kind of help people out from a financial assistance program as well.
Excellent. Well, we'll look forward to making a donation as our thanks for having you in today.
Well, we appreciate that. And you know, the opportunity just to come here again, hopefully aside, and talk about mental health is fantastic. And, you know, I'm glad you guys are talking about it.
Fantastic.
But a couple of real estate guys talking about mental health. It's pretty good stuff.
Yeah. Well, you know, real estate is all about keeping your mental health too.
So. Oh, absolutely.
I mean, and your clients and, you know, things together.
Yeah. Furthermore, you know, reality is, you know, sometimes our lives can be a bit stressful.
Absolutely.
You know, and you know, you just never know. It's good, you know, to refer people to, but if a family member should ever need or need the help, then we feel like we've got a good resource and a and end with Dr. Mara.
That's right.
So thank you so much for joining
us. Thank you guys so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Our pleasure.
Absolutely. Thanks for tuning in for another edition of Charlotte Real Estate Talk. I'm Mike Hagee with Scott Pridmore. Dr. Kevin Mara, thanks for joining us.
Listen, download our podcast, or find out more about Charlotte Real Estate at pridmoreproperties.com.